From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oakland. I'm from East Oakland.
I live on Belvedere Street, two blocks up from Haight.
I'm from the Sunset.
Coming up, we'll meet a disabled activist as he gathers information for his next article in the newspaper Street Spirit.
Most of my writing is about what I see going on the streets, what I see as injustice, kind of insights into why things are the way they are.
Then a man who's been homeless for 8 years describes what selling the Street Spirit newspaper has meant for him.
I'm not on drugs no more. I'm good with saving money, just keeping it in my pocket.
And we'll hear a live conversation with an organization that works to keep homeless youth off the streets.
We are not defined by the labels that people put onto us, and there is no specific type of homeless person.
Reporting on homelessness all this week on Cross Currents. If you've opened a newspaper, visited SF Gate, or turned on the TV news this week, you've probably noticed that you're seeing stories everywhere about homelessness in the Bay Area. There's a reason for that. Back in April, multiple media outlets agreed to devote a full day of attention to the fact that so many people are homeless in and around San Francisco. More than 70 media organizations are participating, and some media, like us here at KALW, have devoted the entire week to the issue. As part of that effort, KALW News decided to find out more about Street Spirit. Street Spirit was started in 1995. It's a newspaper sold by homeless vendors across the East Bay. 2 decades into its run, it sells 20,000 copies of the paper every month, and they get to keep all the proceeds for themselves. The paper advocates on behalf of poor and homeless people, and a few of its writers are formerly homeless themselves. KALW's Mary Reese spent the day with a regular contributor to Street Spirit and brings us this story.
Mr. Cola, how are you, sir? Good. You hanging in there?
Despite the mild spring weather and his outgoing manner, Street Spirit reporter Dan McMullen has death on his mind. He's working on next month's article about what it would cost to claim the body or cremated remains of a homeless person from the morgue.
So I called yesterday to the county to find out, you know, what it would take for me to get a friend out. And the price is actually doubled now.
Doubled over the price of a few decades ago, when McMullen and his friends pooled together $400 and still did not have enough to take home the ashes of their deceased friend, Yumi.
What galls me is that there's people that are willing to do something with this person at whatever memorial they would like to have or whatever, and they would rather just put the person somewhere and say, no, you can't have them until you give us the money.
McMullen writes pieces for Street Spirit almost monthly, and he often drops by People's Park to hear the perspectives of his homeless friends. Today he finds his longtime buddies, Haight Man and Charles Goodwillie, in the shade at the east end of the park.
Hey, Charles. Hey, man, this is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
An article I'm doing this month is about people that have died on the streets and where they end up and where they don't end up.
You mean after they die?
Yeah.
So this is what happens to poor people after they die?
Yeah.
Now.
Good one, Danny.
The Coroner's Bureau says that unclaimed cremains are currently buried in a contract cemetery in Antioch. Goodwillie and Haight Man don't want to end up there, and they tell McMullen they're already making plans for what will happen to them after they die.
And this is what I'm trying to do, the advanced directives for health and mental health, but I also want to try to talk to my sister. I mean, like, what do you want me? Like, what should happen with me? I mean,
right. I'll write a will.
McMullen was homeless for about a decade. He lost his right leg in a motorcycle accident in 1984 and spent more than a year in San Diego hospitals. After discharge, he didn't get disability benefits. He landed in prison for 3 years and became homeless afterward.
It seems like almost everything that I've needed to know about helping and working with people has happened to me. I know how you can get railroaded and end up in prison. I know how you can get disabled and end up on the streets. All these things seem to happen to me, and they've all been really good learning experiences.
He began reporting for the Berkeley Daily Planet until somebody from Street Spirit saw one of his articles and asked him to write one like it for them. McMullen now serves on the paper's editorial board. Writing for Street Spirit is a labor of love.
They give me a little bit of change, but not much. Just enough to say, hey, I'm a real writer. I actually got a dollar for this.
Because of his injuries, McMullen can't keep a full-time job.
So I have to find things that I can do that make me feel that I'm a contributing member of society. They don't pay well, but they make me feel better about who I am and what I'm about.
The next day, McMullen describes what it took to finally get disability benefits 8 years after the accident that cut off his right leg.
I went to the Social Security office, and I went and I took a number one, and I went in there and I said, could you check and see what's going on with my case? And they looked, and then I went outside and I smoked a cigarette looking through the window, and I came in and took another number 14, and I went in and I go, could you check and see what's going on? And I did that all day that day and the next day and the next day after that.
After a week, the manager took him aside to talk.
He goes, you don't have no leg. He looked under the table. He's like, couldn't believe what was going on. He goes, and your arm? And he goes, and you're going around on the crutches, and no one's giving, and you haven't got any benefits at all? I said, no, I have no medical care, nothing.
The manager signed him up for presumptive disability benefits right away, and McMullen got his first payment that day. 7 years later, in 1999, McMullen won a Section 8 voucher in the housing lottery.
When I first got out on the off the streets, I started an organization called Disabled People Outside Project.
McMullen also sits on the Berkeley Welfare Commission. For him, reporting for Street Spirit is a way to give readers better information about what life is like for people on the street.
People want to say there's a lot of people are bad for being homeless. They're there because they do bad things. But that's not really the truth. I mean, most of the people I know that are homeless have had bad things happen to them, but they're not bad people or have done bad things.
McMullen is one of several regular contributors to Street Spirit. Editor Terry Messman likes to draw on many people's expertise.
We have activists, we have lawyers, we have homeless people cover the issues that they see around them.
Messman has been covering poverty and homelessness for the 21 years he's been editing, laying out, and publishing the paper. But the organizers of this week's wave of coverage on homelessness did not invite him or his paper to join in. Messman was reluctant to lend his voice to the effort, but he finally agreed to talk with me by phone.
This was launched because an editor of the Chronicle, which has been the most notoriously anti-homeless publication that I can think of, was personally offended by the sight of homeless people in the city. And I wonder why they weren't personally offended by the memorials we've had where more than 100 homeless people have died on the streets of San Francisco virtually every year. Where was the Chronicle's concern then? Maybe good things can happen out of bad motives. I don't know, but I don't trust it.
He's referring to an incident Chronicle executive editor Audrey Cooper has spoken about, where she saw two homeless people having sex in a tent on the street. She was on vacation when I called, so I spoke with reporter Kevin Fagan about Messman's criticism. Fagan's been covering homeless issues for the Chronicle for more than 20 years.
I've known Terry for many years, and I respect him. I think he overstates our position a bit in this case. I don't think we're insensitive.
Fagan says he feels he has a mandate to see homeless people's humanity, and that Cooper's idea of focused coverage reflects that.
I don't think Audrey sees anyone as just offensive. She's really interested in a compassionate, rational, and effective approach to ending homelessness. These are people in need, and as a society, we shouldn't have this type of pain going on in our streets.
On this, Fagan and Messman share common ground. Messman says homeless newspapers like his and Street Sheet in San Francisco are part of a long tradition of advocacy journalism. Thomas Paine's Common Sense, for example, and William Lloyd Garrison's anti-slavery newspaper, The Liberator.
What poverty is doing to this nation is an incredibly important untold story, and we're trying our little best to cover what we see right around us in the East Bay.
Messman says giving Street Spirit to homeless people to sell not only puts money in their pockets, it also breaks down the barriers to sharing those stories.
every time someone buys Street Spirit, they're having a personal interaction with someone, and they're having to pay attention to that person.
Paying attention, seeing the humanity of the vulnerable people on our streets, and continuing the conversation even after the wave of news coverage may be the first steps towards creating real solutions. For Cross Currents, I'm Mary Reese in Berkeley.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. You'll find homeless vendors selling the Street Spirit newspaper in front of grocery stores, restaurants, and post offices across the East Bay. The Berkeley Bowl Marketplace is a favorite location. KALW's Mary Reese brings us this conversation with a regular.
Small donation, sir, towards the Street Spirit today. Anything would be appreciated.
My name is Orlando Marcel Williams. I'm from Berkeley, California. I've been selling Street Spirit over 8 years now. It stopped me from going in and out of jail. I don't go to jail no more. And helped me with, provide me with food, clothing, and meet a lot of different people, good people. A lot of times I wake up with no money. I take one of these papers. Might bring me $50. Might bring me $100. Might bring me $3. Something better than nothing any day. That's why I love this paper. One day I was here, and the guy walked up to me. He said, "How much is the paper?" I said, "Whatever you want to donate, sir." He walked in, came back out with a cup of coffee, went in his top pocket and gave me three $100 bills. Have a nice day. You find good people like that out here.
Little help today?
Sometimes the police come and ask us, "You have your badge? You leave your badge at home. Well, I'll take your money and your papers and give you a citation."
How you doing today, man?
Oh, hanging in there.
I'm hanging like wallpaper too.
All right,
thanks a lot, man.
A lot of these people I didn't seen around, and I know familiar faces and old friends and people that come up here and know I'm up here to see me, talk with me, ask me how I'm doing. I grew up on the White Way in McGee. I went to Berkeley High, got a baseball scholarship to play for the Oakland A's. And then after my mom had got murdered, I had a nervous breakdown from there. I didn't have no one to turn to because I was the oldest out the bunch. So my grandmother and my grandfather, that's her mother and her father, they was up in age. They took custody of me and my brothers when they was up in age, so they passed away. After I had the nervous breakdown, I went to Napa Hospital for four and a half years. Still didn't have no one to turn to, so I started using drugs, from drugs to prison, out of prison, back to drugs. I kept angry. That's why I stayed in prison a lot. I asked them, why did they do that to my mom, take my mom from me and my brothers? But I'm not on drugs no more. I'm good with saving money. Just keep it in my pocket. Just buy the things I need. Sooner or later, God could provide me with a place. Because you know, I mean well. They gave me a spot, told me to come down. I was on GA, bring proof of income, Social Security card. I did all that. So they said, "Oh, well, you get to move in next week, Mr. Williams. Next month, Mr. Williams. The place should be ready for you next month." So about a week before I'm ready to move in, they called me back down to the office. They had gave me the keys and everything. They said, "Oh, you got to get the keys out." I said, "Why is that?" "We did a criminal background check on you." So they said, "Well, appeal it." So I just was kind of upset and just to forget them people.
A little help today, sir, towards the Street Spirit. Anything be appreciated. All right, you have a good day, man.
I'm just that type of person. I got a good heart, and if you say no, I can understand it. I can respect it. If you say yeah, fine with me.
I just got to keep on, keep my head up and keep smiling. I might just have 7 or 8 papers and I run out of papers, I panhandle. And they still give up donations. Sometimes I don't need papers to make money. Depends on how you present yourself to a person. Some people call it begging, but I don't call it begging. You know, if you got a heart and your heart feel free to give up something, it's good. If you don't, oh well. I love this. This is my job. I wouldn't give it up for nothing in the world.
That piece was produced by KELW's Mary Reese. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. And now over to San Francisco. Larkin Street Youth Services has been working to get homeless youth health services, education, and housing for more than 3 decades. Their main office is in the Tenderloin, but they have connections to spots around the city. Thousands of young people pass through their doors every year. This morning, KALW's Your Call broadcast live from Larkin Street Youth Services, and host Rose Aguilar spoke with youth involved in their programs. We're going to listen in on a portion of that conversation.
So let's talk with some of the youth on today's show. Jess Rodriguez-Williams is a youth advisory board member for Larkin Street and works for Transitional Age Youth San Francisco. Jess, before we talk about your story, what are your thoughts about the misconceptions about the young people we see on the streets of San Francisco?
Yeah, I think there's very many stereotypes as what it means to be homeless. And I find that the more organizing and the more community that I indulge myself with, people are often surprised at the way that we are able to articulate our oppressions and articulate the systemic institutions that contribute to us being on the streets, such as, you know, environmental racism, homophobia, transphobia, all the different isms and phobias that contribute to the decisions we have to make to survive. So I think that me as an individual being able to talk about it sheds a light on the very different faces and the very individualistic reasons why we make the decisions that we make.
And Maddie Cross, you're a student in the Larkin Street Academy Tech Learning Center. What would you add about misconceptions? What do you want people to know?
That there's, as she was saying, like there's so many different types of people out there. I mean, we all have our own background story. I mean, some of us, you know, it was because of drugs or something that brought us to the streets. Some of us, it's like you were saying, there's abuse or something at home. I mean, for everyone, it's an individual journey. And so it's like to put people into a category or group based on what you think they are or why they are there is silly, because I mean, like, really, there could be any number of reasons why. And so just not to judge a person based on what you think they went through or what they do, or apparently what you think they do, and stuff.
And Feijan E., what would you add?
Honestly speaking, I find this stuff quite humorous, really. All these so-called misconceptions and stuff, because really, you kind of have to think. You're going to be spending outside in the cold, and like, you know, so many people are going to give you that one side glance of disgust that, you know, it really gets on my nerves. And then like that look of pity, and then the feel that, oh, they're just going to reach out into their pocket and bring out some change, saying, oh, you possibly need it more than I do. And it's honestly very frustrating. You know, you have to think they're not doing this because they felt like it, or they had a choice to leave, or, you know, because the situation happened and, you know, it was either out of their reach or just something terrible happened. And, you know, stuff like that happens and you really just can't do anything about it. And kind of frustrates me that people that just because you're in a situation that is slightly higher than what, you know, you naturally expect, you believe that you're in a superior position to start judging them for what they actually do. And, you know, it really does get on my nerves. You know, they're normal human beings that just got into a bad time, and, you know, you just really need to help them out. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of thankful that Larkin Street actually sees us for, you know, actual individuals and, you know, normal pieces of trash are on, like, you know, on the street and stuff. It's, you know, it's almost uplifting, really.
Fejan E. is a student here in the Larkin Street Academy Tech Learning Center. Maddie Cross is a student also in the Academy Tech Learning Center. Jess Rodriguez-Williams is a youth advisory board member for Larkin Street. And Jess Rodriguez-Williams, you focus on racial, intersectional, queer women of color issues and organizing.
Yes.
And we'll talk about that in a minute because you have a lot of interesting stories to share. Mm-hmm. But first off, tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, definitely. Well, my journey really starts when I was 17, where my family, we lost our housing. And when most people were trying to figure out what class ring they were going to buy, my family and I were struggling to find housing, sustainable housing. Fast forward a year, it took me about a year and a half almost to navigate the bureaucracies of attending community college, financial aid, proving that I needed financial aid assistance, proving that I was independent and supporting myself since I had lost my housing. And that whole process really made me realize how a lot of systems that are in place, including higher education, are often discouraging of people like me and the stories that we share to discourage us from pursuing our higher education. So for me as an individual, pursuing my higher education has been very validating for my story and my struggle. The things that I often felt crazy for witnessing, whether it be high rates of teen pregnancy, substance abuse, whether it be you know, chronic poverty, things like that, mental health issues, I definitely noticed these things as I was growing up and through friends and family. But the more that I pursued my higher education, I realized that these things are not specifically our own faults. Unfortunately, the way society is, they have a stereotype, like we were talking about earlier, about what it means to be homeless. They have these versions of us, of how we live our lives, which there's so many different varieties of the way that we navigate, that I feel for me to be able to sit here and talk to you is to not only prove people wrong, but also on a larger scale to be like, yeah, like if someone were to see numerous young people walking through San Francisco, they wouldn't quote unquote think they were homeless.
Right.
I've had issues where I've gone to welfare offices, and because I'm able to be like, yo, like, you're not doing your job, I want to speak to your manager, and I know what my rights are, and I know that I am, you know, entitled to specific services, that people really truly think that as young people and as homeless young people, that we will just take whatever we will scrape out of the bottom of a barrel. And with my navigation, with my organizing, I want to promote, especially for young queer women of color who struggle with homelessness or various, you know, intersectional oppressions, I want all of us to know, whatever gender we identify as, right? I want all of us to know that we have options and that we are not defined by the labels that people put onto us, and there is no specific type of homeless person. So the face of homelessness is one that very much appeals to, you know, the white savior complex of, you know, oh, this poor brown or black person needs help, needs to be saved. Whereas in reality, it's like, we don't need to be saved. We need access. We need recognition for our struggle. And we need not only someone to, like, see that we are humans, but also hand us the mic.
That was Your Calls, Rose Aguilar, broadcasting live this morning at Larkin Street Youth Services. You can listen to that whole episode at KALW.org and tune into Your Call every weekday at 10 a.m. right here on KALW. You heard from us. Now we'd love to hear from you. If you have thoughts on homelessness, tell us about them. Give us a call and leave us a message at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and we may get your comments on the air. Our team includes Leela Day, Nicole Grigg, Angela Johnston, Jurgen Klem, Abhilasha Madan, James Rowland, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Mary Lee Williams. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Jeremy Dalmas. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. You may have heard of crashing waves, crashing cars, but have you heard of crashing hotels? That's the name of the band you're hearing now, and they play Thursday night at Starline Social Club in Oakland. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.